brings us to the public comment portion of the agenda. This is an opportunity for the public to speak to us on issues that are not on today's agenda. Mr. Ludford.
Let me be brief. Thank you very much, Commission. My name is Chris Ledford. I'm a waterman from Virginia Beach. I also wanted to thank you again for your time. What I'm here to ask for is the Commission to look into an emergency regulation to increase the daily trip limit from 3,300 pounds to 4,000 on spiny dogfish to keep our fishermen fishing and the viable fishery viable. We're getting a lot less than we were last year. We want to keep these guys fishing. A lot of them are talking about doing other things, going oystering for one thing. Some of them can't afford to re-rig into conch pots. We've talked to staff and worked on this. That's all I have to say. I'm going to let staff, if they would, give you their feelings on the matter. I appreciate your time and considering.
Who are you representing other than yourself?
I'm representing, talked to Mr. Ernie Bowden. All knows I'm here speaking on this out of Chincoteague. Talked to the fishermen in Wachaprig. Scott McDonald, Spots Fish Packing in Virginia Beach, and, of course, the buyers that are processing the fish in Massachusetts. There's a lot of people fishing. There's seven or eight boats fishing out of Spots Marina there at Rudy Inlet and Lynn Haven.
And they all support this?
Absolutely. All support it.
Any Absolutely. Questions to Chris?
They'd much rather keep fishing for dogfish than go re-rig for oysters. And the work we've done on the oysters, you know, I mean, it is a healthy fishery, and hats off to the commission for what they've done. But if we can keep everybody through this period of winter fishing in the fisheries they're fishing in, we don't have overlap, and, you know, I think it would be in our best interest if we could keep these guys fishing. Again, the federal daily trip limit is 4,000. We just want to mirror that.
Right. Joey, you want to get us up to speed?
Sure. Commission will remember that, you know, this is a fishery that we've been dealing with for quite a number of years, making some adjustments. The last adjustment was to take the daily trip limit up to 3,300 pounds. That was an increase from 3,000. But, of course, this is the same fishery that a few years ago we were bringing in 3 million pounds easily. Now we can barely bring in 300,000. The market has eroded. There has been an issue in Europe on the product as far as their standards of health over there, like it's PCBs and some other issues. So we don't have a market, but the little bit of fishing they can get in for dogfish and a little bit of market they can attain, we definitely want to promote and keep these guys working. I have had calls from Scott McDonald from Spots Fish House on this issue as well. And noting the market conditions, you know, take advantage of what we can get when it's out there. This is if they can get 4,000 pounds in, they can only get about 14 cents a pound. So getting that extra 700 pounds may make the trip just a little bit more profitable for them to actually go out and get some quota instead of leaving it on the table any way we can get it. This would be an adjustment to Chapter 490. It would be an emergency action because we already have 490 on the table today for another action later coming up in your agenda. And because we are more than 30 days from the next commission meeting, the staff's recommendation would be to actually make the adjustment to Section 42, increasing the trip from 3,300 to 4,000, but not have an effective date until January 1 of 2014. That way, the 30-day time period for the emergency would last into when we have the next commission meeting, when we can have a formal public hearing on this item.
And so, looking at 28.2-210, adoption of emergency regulations. You know, there are certain standards we have to meet: preservation of the public peace, health, safety, welfare of the seafood industry, protection of the seafood industry, natural resources. I assume this falls under welfare of the seafood industry.
Yes, Commissioner, we think this definitely is under the welfare of the industry.
All right. You have something for us?
I have a draft reg.
Anyone wish to speak to this matter? Okay. What's the commission? It's a little bit unusual. I would have to say that we take regulatory action during a public comment.
If it wasn't for the unique circumstances of this fishery, Commissioner, staff would not be supporting this action.
You're not aware of any opposition?
Not aware of any opposition.
All
Well, the other thing, too, is you're going to have the public comment before it goes into effect. You're going to vote on whether it becomes permanent reg before it even goes into effect. Because it's going to be, you have to put it.
No, it would go into effect January 1, right?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It's
right.
December.
And the next commission meeting is January 20.
We would have to hold a public hearing January 24 to permanent.
Yeah, we'd need the request for a public hearing for the 28th.
I'm sorry.
What's the commission's point, Mr.
Taggart? My question, are there any long-term ramifications for our limits as we go into 2014-15 if we increase this?
Because of the loss of the market in this entire fishery, the quotas are just not being taken. If anything, the high standard of coastal quota we have now will probably continue a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of quota will be coast-wide will be left on the table this season and probably to come until that market in Europe comes back. So whatever they can get now and make a little profit off of it is a good thing for the industry.
All right.
Any other questions for staff? What's your pleasure?
make a motion that we adopt this emergency measure.
All right. Is there a second? Mr. Tankard?
So moved.
Comments on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Emergency Chapter 490 is adopted.
And that includes the request for public hearing for January.
To make it permanent, or thank consider you. Making it permanent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Who else wishes to be heard? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
Lang? Lane?
Yes, sir. My name is Jim Lang. I'm an attorney with Pender and Coward in Virginia Beach. And if I could just have a moment to figure out how to make the computer work. And if I could, Mr. Commissioner, we have a copy of this in a notebook that we can give to each of the commissioner and the associate commissioners.
Love to have it.
In the notebook, you'll see the PowerPoint slides that are going to be up on the screen. But also in the inside front cover, if you would pull out this color photograph, this is something that we'll be referring to from time to time as we move through the presentation. I come before you to ask the Virginia Marine Resources Commission to enforce Virginia Code Section 28.2-1203A on behalf of Carmelo Gomez, the owner of a property today. Mr. Gomez's brother, Alejandro Gomez, and his sister-in-law, Regina Gomez, are here and would also like to speak. The section that we're asking the commission to enforce states that it is unlawful for any person to dump, trespass, or encroach upon or over the beds of rivers or streams or creeks unless the act is performed pursuant to a permit issued by the commission. The property is, we're going to show it to you in aerial photos. It's a commercial boatyard, and in essence what is happening here is we have an individual who's operating a Walmart-sized commercial boatyard on a 7-Eleven-sized property of about 1 acre. Let me show you some photos that will orient you to the site. Mr. Gomez, our client, owns the property at 307 Campostella Road. The commercial boatyard that's causing the difficulties is at 425 Campostella Road. We're in the city of Norfolk. This is the south end of the Campostella Bridge. And our client's property is a 6-acre parcel that I'll outline here. It goes up to the Elizabeth River. Down through this little inlet to approximately right here at, The property line is at approximately this location right here. This is a 6-acre parcel. The 425 Campostella property is immediately to the south, and it is a 1-acre parcel right in here.
And that's this?
Yes, it is. That's that same photo. Mr. Gomez has two tenants on his property. Lyons Shipyard up at the northern end, right here. He has this pad that he's created that is a prime location for waterfront activity. And this bulkhead was installed pursuant to a VMRC permit in the last few years. And then Marine Contracting Corporation operates right here out of this location that I'm showing you. The Lyons property, you can see it's the vessels are all moored at on a bulkhead with mooring dolphins and bollards, all presumably permitted by the VMRC. This facility, dolphins, about 8 mooring dolphins all the way down. And then Marine Contracting Corporation moors their vessels using a dolphin right here and another mooring dolphin right here, all permitted by the VMRC. Now, and then this is Great Lakes Dredge and Dock right here at this location. This photo was taken in 2012, and the area right in here is the area of interest. There are approximately 28 vessels in that photograph. Three of the vessels in this photograph, this barge, and this tugboat right here, are operated by Marine Contracting Corporation. The other 20 plus vessels are all owned or were brought to the waterway through Mr. Mullane's operation at this 1-acre parcel just to the south of our client. This is the 2012 aerial photo. We've been working with staff on this, and the Virginia Marine Resources Commission flew the site for us in August of this year and produced this aerial to give us an update. This is August 20 of 2013. Same property, same large number of vessels, and in this photo, three of them are Marine Contracting. This tug right here, barge right here, and this barge. Marine Contracting Corporation, this is their home base. They have a total of 5 barges and 2 or 3 tugs. Their vessels are deployed to work sites up and down the East Coast. They will have a minimal number of vessels in place at any time, and their vessels come and go, but it's never more than 2 or 3, perhaps 4 at the most. Last Friday, one of the local television stations, Wavy 10, put their chopper up in the air and got updated photos, and you can see the congestion again. The Marine Contracting Corporation, our client's tenant, was responsible for this barge, and that tug. All the rest of these vessels, with perhaps the exception of 1 or 2, is either owned by Mr. Mullane or was brought to the waterway facilitated by him. Now, we've asked the commission to take action to enforce a specific code section that forbids, among other things, trespass without a state-owned permit. Last Wednesday, First Sergeant Copperthite met with our client's retained consultant. Our consultant had prepared an analysis showing 6 vessels touching state-owned bottom. And and that was shared with First Sergeant Copperthite, this being one of them. This is barge ATC 12,000. It's been present at its current location for the last 3 or 4 years. 245 feet long. The bow is sitting in a mud flat. There's draft marks on the stern, and that's where the measurements were taken to establish that it's aground, at least at low tide. And this, I mentioned that you might want to refer back to this from time to time. This is vessel number, or vessel lettered A in the aerial diagram. So you'll see it up at the top center of the photograph. The waterway running up this way eventually ends. It's beautiful wetlands up this way, but down, beginning where this vessel is and extending north up towards the Elizabeth River, it's a floating junkyard. This is vessel L on your diagram. This vessel arrived in the waterway on March 4th of 2011. It's 205 feet long. About a year after it got in, it sprung a leak and the engine room flooded and a compartment up forward flooded. It's listing 5 to 10 degrees to starboard at the present time, and it's another vessel that is aground at low tide, and again, First Sergeant Copperthight verified that when he was out at the site with us last Wednesday. This vessel was built in 1943. It's actually a very famous ship. It is the last existing ship that was involved in the operations in Iwo Jima during World War II. That was during its time as the USS Zuni. It was transferred to the Coast Guard, saw service as a Coast Guard cutter, the Tamaroa, and its actions in the late 80s, early 90s gave rise to the movie A Perfect Storm. That movie is based on the actions of this ship. The ship was taken out of service in the early 90s. It was purchased by a foundation that had intention of turning it into a museum. By March of 2011, Mr. Mullane had it brought into the waterway, and it's been present ever since. Given the ship's age and the construction techniques in the 1940s, asbestos-containing material, possible inside lead-based paint, possible PCBs. We know we have a hull that sprung a leak in the last year and a half. Temporary patch applied instead of taking it out, putting it on dock, and repairing the hull in a more permanent fashion. And now it's aground, which means two times a day it lifts off the bottom and sets back on the bottom, stressing that hull and putting it at risk of further damage. This is a vessel, and it's got several 55-gallon drums that have been collected back on the stern deck. This is a vessel that's trespassing on state bottom, and there's been no permit issued by the commission for that. This is a 24-foot cabin cruiser. On your diagram, it is vessel K. It's on the western shore, pushed up against Riverside Cemetery, which would be a living shoreline if it didn't have these vessels pushed up on its shore. In 2010, a Google Earth photo shows that it was afloat in the waters very close to Mr. Mullane's shoreline, and that would be in between vessel B and the eastern shore. It was tucked right in there. It was afloat. 2012 or 2013, it was placed in the current location. And this is another vessel that First Sergeant Copperthight agreed is aground at low tide. If you look inside that 24-foot cabin cruiser, this is the battery for that vessel that's sitting inside, and it's awash. And again, looking inside, you can see on the left-hand side the motor and the oil fuel tank, both awash in that 24-foot cabin cruiser that's been placed in its current location where you see it. In addition to the last two vessels trespassing on state-owned bottom and no permit being issued, both of these vessels present a potential environmental contamination hazard. This This is a dredge vessel. It is vessel J in your diagram. And in 2010, this was afloat in the waters near Mr. Mullane's shoreline, just like the 24-foot cabin cruiser I just showed you. And in 2011 or 2012, it was placed at its current location. Another one of the vessels we reviewed with Sergeant Copperthite when we were on scene last Wednesday, and he confirms that it's aground, at least at low tide. This is the Tug America. It is nestled up against the former Zuni. It's a 100-foot-long tug, and it has... And it likewise is aground at least at low tide, and that was confirmed by Sergeant Copperthite during a site visit last Wednesday. This is the barge Bonnie B. In 2010 or 2011, that's when it was placed in its current location. And this is another one of the vessels that Sergeant Copperthite confirmed was aground during the site visit last week. It's noteworthy. This is a pedestal crane barge, and the pedestal crane portion of the equipment, you can see the crane boom right here. And in another photo, this is the pedestal crane barge. And to get a feel for the scale of the size of the equipment we're talking about, there's an individual standing next to it. The pedestal crane is sitting on top of vessel Q. The pedestal crane barge, the Bonnie B, is vessel O in the diagram. The pedestal crane is on vessel Q. Vessel Q is a 200-foot-long hopper barge that has been filled with creosote-laden telephone poles and drums and paint cans and miscellaneous kind of refuse. There's an awful lot of toxic contamination in that 200-foot hopper barge. That 200-foot hopper barge has been in the waterway for a very long time. It was in the waterway before Mr. Mullane purchased his property in 2005. And you can get a feel for the age of it because you can see vegetation that's actually growing on the pedestal on the top of that hopper barge. But it's filled with drums, paint cans, miscellaneous refuse, and it's in very poor condition. And if and when it comes apart, it's going to be an awfully big mess in this waterway. Another vessel that is, we believe, touching state bottom, this would be vessel B in your diagram. And it's a little hard to see, but the first ship I showed you, the ATC barge 12,000, that's that very large barge there, and right here is vessel B, which is a 100-foot-long barge that's been stationary at this location since 2009, and it's been used as a work platform between the 245-foot barge that's immediately to its left, and then Mr. Mullane's shoreline, which is right here. So for 4, perhaps going on 5 years, that barge has been sitting there and used as a pier. It's got to be touching state bottom, but our consultant has not had a chance to evaluate that, and that's not one of the vessels that we reviewed with Sergeant Copperthite last Wednesday. The ones that Sergeant Copperthite agreed were aground were the 6 that I've already shown you. Next are 11 concrete pipe sections. Those are in the diagram. They're letter P. The business model for Mr. Mullane's operation, in addition to ship repair, salvaging equipment off of ships and reselling it, is also the creation of artificial reefs. So there are several very large vessels that have been brought into the waterway. I've shown you two of them at least at this point. But back in 2009, the city of Jacksonville, Florida, used 20-foot-long precast concrete sections like this to create an artificial reef in their waters near their city. And in 2010 or 2011, these precast concrete pipe sections were placed in their current location, again, touching state bottom, and no permit for this activity. So far, we've been talking about trespass on state-owned bottom. There's also encroachment on state-owned bottom that's taking place at this as well. And the encroachment interferes with adjacent or nearby properties, one of the factors under 28.2.1205A. The encroachment interferes with the state-owned bottom, doesn't let sunlight get through to reach sub-aquatic vegetation, and it prevents other people from using the waterway. So I'll give you several examples of that. This vessel right here formerly was a U.S. Navy vessel repair barge. It's 305 feet long, approximately 50 feet wide. So in terms of square footage that it occupies in the waterway, it would be somewhere in the area of 15,000 square feet. This vessel has been in place at its current location since about 2005 or 2006. It was introduced to the waterway in 2005 or 2006. It's been stationary at its current location since 2008. And if you recall a moment ago, I mentioned a 200-foot hopper barge that's filled with materials that have toxic contamination and create a very large environmental threat. That 200-foot hopper barge is vessel Q in your diagram. The U.S. Navy repair barge is vessel R. You can see that hopper barge right here. In fact, you can see the pedestal crane top that was placed above it. And our analysis indicates that this 205-foot hopper barge formerly was located down where the 24-foot cabin cruiser and the 80-foot dredge I showed you earlier, those were vessels J and K, if you recall. That's where this 200-foot hopper barge was located at the time when Mr. Mullane purchased his property in 2005. After he purchased his property, this hopper barge was moved to this location. This 300-foot-plus Navy repair barge was brought into the waterway, and this hopper barge is pushed up on the shoreline. It's touching state bottom. It's essentially being used as a camel to keep that 300-foot repair barge off of the shoreline and out in the waterway. It's essentially being used as a substitute for a pier. Another example of encroachment, this is the fishing vessel Shearwater. It's vessel N. In the diagram. It's 166 feet long, and it's been at its current location for a little over a year. Now, my client believes that the root cause of this problem is if you look at all of the other commercial boatyards that are operating on this waterway, Lyons Shipyard, Marine Contracting Corporation, Great Lake Dredge and Dock, each of them moor their vessels at a location that has had VMRC oversight through the installation of a bulkhead, through installation of mooring dolphins, and the like. In sharp contrast, Mr. Mullane's commercial boatyard moors its vessels at unpermitted facilities. Here's an example of a mooring facility used by Mr. Mullane. You've got this equipment attached to a tree. This tree is located between O and P in the aerial diagram that I've given you. And then there's a line that runs from the equipment that's attached to the tree that goes out to the barge Bonnie B, which we looked at earlier, the barge that had the pedestal crane on it formerly. Another example of a mooring facility used by Mr. Mullane, the 200-foot hopper barge right here that's used to secure this 300-foot Navy vessel right here. Another example of the mooring facility used by Mr. Mullane. This is the barge, the 245-foot vessel that I showed you in the one of the very early slides, the barge ATC 12,000 is vessel A in the diagram or in the aerial photo. And the structure that it's being moored to is the 100-foot barge that I showed you in that blurry picture earlier. It's vessel B in the aerial photograph. This 100-foot barge right here, which has been in place for the last 4 or 5 years, and though our consultant hasn't had a chance yet to completely establish that it's touching state bottom, it's hard to understand how that 100-foot barge could remain stationary for the past 4 or 5 years and be used as a work platform if it's not trespassing on a state-owned bottom. So that's the mooring facility he's using instead of a mooring facility like this one, which would involve a permit from the VMRC. In essence, what's happening here is we have a commercial boatyard that's flying under the radar because it set up all of these mooring facilities that ought to have permitting from the VMRC because they're either trespassing on state bottom or encroaching on state bottom. And they haven't gotten the permit. This has had quite an impact on our client's property. And Mrs. Gomez is going to be here to speak to that. Our client is confronted with a floating junkyard created by his neighbor right on his doorstep. And he's had one of his former tenants who was renting a building and has since left, complained about the congestion in the waterway before he left the property, and efforts to re-rent that building so far have been unsuccessful. This blighted waterway puts negative pressure on the property value for Mr. Gomez, and the solution that he recommends is a simple and straightforward one, that VMRC require Mr. Mullane to obtain a permit for his activities at his commercial boatyard that trespass, encroach, or dump on state-owned river bottom. Now, we've worked very closely with staff over the last 4 or 5 months on this problem, and we've had wonderful cooperation from staff, including the overflight that was conducted in August and gave us some of the aerials that we saw today. And one of the things that Sergeant Copperthite told me when we were at the site last Wednesday is that the view is that this is a problem that should be addressed by somebody else, at least at this point, and that he understands that the city of Norfolk is going to take the lead on this. Now, I would submit that having listened to the hearing earlier today and listening to the highly educated VMRC staff, that the resources to really evaluate the impacts on this water body of these activities, that expertise rests within the VMRC, and the city of Norfolk does not necessarily have that same level of expertise. Norfolk's authority, moreover, is focused on finding the owner of a vessel. And I know Mr. Mullane has been in front of the commission before, and you've heard testimony from him about, well, a lot of those vessels, I don't own them. Well, this commission has authority under the code provision that we're asking you to enforce to require any person whose activities encroach, trespass, or dump to get a permit for their activities or to hold them in violation. You don't have to determine first that the person committing the violation owns the thing that they put in the water. It's enough that they put it in the water and they didn't get a permit. So if Norfolk is limited only to applying its authority to an owner, and if there's going to be a lot of squabbles about who owns what, the commission has the broader authority to hold any person accountable who encroaches, trespasses, or dumps. So if you leave this with Norfolk, you're going to get perhaps a ship-by-ship kind of solution eventually. But if the commission acts, we can have a solution that applies to an entire commercial boatyard, which is the approach that makes the most sense here. You have a commercial boatyard flying under the radar, and things have just gotten out of control. Also, the VMRC has more tools. You have both civil and criminal tools available to address the problem. Civil enforcement under 28.2-1212, which would involve a site inspection by your enforcement officer, and if he finds a substantial violation, he can submit a sworn complaint, and then based on the sworn complaint, the commission can issue an order to require compliance, to require removal of vessels. And as an incentive, there's civil penalties that are available that are listed there. The commission, like Norfolk, also has criminal enforcement. Sometimes it's said, well, if Norfolk uses its city code, it has class one misdemeanor available to it. But criminal enforcement for a violation of 28.2.1203, which is the code provision we're asking the commission to act under, likewise has class one misdemeanor authority if it were thought that criminal enforcement is the best way to approach this. The other point I'd make is Mr. Gomez is before you today asking the commission to exercise its own authority because he believes the commission is better positioned to deal with this problem. But if the commission is unable to do that at this time, then what Mr. Gomez would ask is that if you're going to defer the lead on this to another part of the government, that there be a fixed endpoint, and that we would know by when and what type of action it is that's going to be taken by the agency that the commission decided to defer to. The last thing I have for you is in the inside front cover of your notebook, I gave you a timeline of Mr. Gomez's efforts to resolve this problem. And, you know, as I walked into the building today, I was struck by what I read on the wall, that the VMRC's mission is to serve as stewards of Virginia's marine and aquatic resources and protectors of its tidal waters and homelands for present and future generations. This water body needs VMRC to serve as a steward because it's a mess. And so we're asking the VMRC to take action under the code provision that we cited, and I know that Mrs. Gomez would like to speak to you as well.
Before we hear from Ms. Gomez, let me respond to your presentation and tell you where we are as an agency on this, outside of any action the commission might want to take. I would agree, and I thank you for the presentation. I think it's been very helpful, very thorough, and it certainly does give the appearance that there is a mess there and needs to be addressed. The approach that you have recommended is a little bit different than the approach we normally take on situations like this. And you hinted at that. Typically, we look at 28.2.1210, that speaks of hazardous properties that are unlawfully placed on state-owned bottomlands. We have held back in pursuing this because we were aware that the city of Norfolk was pursuing it, and we made a number of attempts to contact the Norfolk City Deputy City Attorney to see where they were on solving this problem, and we went for quite a while and not hearing from them, to the point where up until, I guess, last night, I was ready to direct my staff to get involved. We did hear from the Deputy City Attorney just last night. I know Tony has an email that sort of brings us up to date that you can share with the commission and run us through that. But in looking at that email, it appears to me that the City of Norfolk is seeking our assistance as well. And I'm certainly prepared at this point to direct my staff to do everything in their power to assist the City of Norfolk to start to address this. I want to turn to my attorney and ask for your comments on the approach that Mr. Lyons has recommended. I mean, we typically use 1210, which is a criminal violation, to take the offender to court, see what the court does. If that doesn't result in the structures being removed, typically the matter's brought before this commission in public session with a request from staff to refer the matter to the Attorney General's office for, I guess, civil penalty actions. Is that correct?
Yes, Commissioner. For the most part, that is correct. I mean, getting back to the nut of the matter, or the root of the matter, the proper vehicle to take care of this is 28.2-1210, and it has certain provisions in there, including ascertaining the owner of each individual vessel. The sweeping suggestion that you have is beyond probably notions of due process and the jurisdiction of the Commission's basic law. So for us to go that way, for the Commission to go that way, would basically take us a few steps backwards, likely from the pushback that we would get from, I think it's Mr. Mullane. So 1210 would probably be the best vehicle to go forward under, and at that point, the Commission, once the vessel's owners are identified, would be asked to remove the vessels. If they don't remove the vessels, then the officer investigating can bring the matter before the Commission, and the Commission can send a letter or bring the person before the Commission and direct that person to remove the vessel. If they don't do it, at that point, the Commission can ask the Attorney General's office to seek appropriate enforcement action, including an injunction to remove and penalties for failure to remove, which I wouldn't see any problem with pursuing that avenue. It's just going to take a little bit longer than just coming in with you're trespassing and encroaching and take it all out. It's going to take a little bit more than that. It's just going to take a lot more than that.
All right. I'm going to let you respond, but let me go back to Tony and have him fill us in on what we've heard from the city attorney, and you'll get another chance, Mr. Lane.
Thank you. A few days ago, we have been trying to coordinate with the city for some time just on what their approach is here, and it's followed a meeting back in the summer with the city and our staff, and Mr. Lang, I believe, was at the meeting to discuss how to proceed with this. And we were under the impression that the city was going to more or less take the lead in terms of dealing with the derelict and abandoned vessels in a manner similar to what Paul has described under 1210. The city has the authority under enabling legislation to adopt an ordinance to deal with these types of structures, and they've done that, as I understand, from Cindy. But anyway, Cindy Hall, the deputy city attorney, did get in touch with us, and last night she forwarded me an email, which you have now before you. The email speaks for itself, but I think it'd be appropriate to go over a couple highlights of the information contained in the email, just to sort of put this in perspective on
where the city seems to be and where we are relative to the city's actions. Ms. Hall did say she was out sick and as a result had not been able to respond to us any sooner. And she points out that Mr. Lang has, over the course of several months, provided information to the city and VMRC regarding the vessels that are in the cove. And that's just the kind of information that was provided here today from Mr. Lang. She points out that we, of course, did a flyover to try to get a better photograph up to date of what's there and try to ascertain the situation. She indicated that she had requested from Mr. Lang a description of the vessels that his clients owned and were in the waterway, and I think she concluded, based on that information, or Mr. Lang provided information, that there were three vessels in the waterway that involved his clients, and that's consistent, I think, with what Mr. Lang has described here today. But that they implied that the rest of the vessels in the waterway may have been tied to or owned by Mr. Mullane. Cindy points out that while she's been trying to get a meeting with Mr. Mullane, who's referenced here today as the owner of many of the vessels and the manager of the property nearby, that she had been unsuccessful because he was out of town, but he's back now. She had contact with him, and they've actually arranged for a meeting tomorrow. To meet on site to go over Mr. Mullane's perspective on what's his, what's not his, and you know, I guess maybe what the plan of attack might be for dealing with some of those vessels. She'd indicated to me in this email, though, that Mr. Mullane told her that he can provide information that a good number of the vessels can be linked to Mr. Lang's clients or current or former lessees of the property. So there's a difference of opinion, I guess, from Mr. Mullane and Mr. Lang potentially over the ownership of the vessels. And, of course, that routinely is an issue with older abandoned vessels like these, that who do they actually belong to and who's the actual responsible party. And I think that's an issue that's going to require some investigation here, a further investigation. Ms. Hall points out in her email to me that she understands that the Coast Guard did an assessment of the vessels and found no immediate environmental threat. She also recollected that the Corps of Engineers issued a letter that the vessels weren't not a navigation or impacting navigation in that particular waterway. And I think maybe that might be referring more to there was no real channel in there. And that would be my perspective on why they would have come to that conclusion. That may be incorrect, but that's what I'll throw out as a potential rationale there. Ms. Hall goes on to point out in her email that the problem is sufficient magnitude to require a coordination between various agencies. She points out that the city and VMRC can't really act alone on this. This might be even involved federal action, Coast Guard, or Corps as well, but that we need to work together on this to try and figure out a resolution. She points out, much as Paul did, that typically what you have to do here is really ascertain the owner of a vessel to seek the course of action that was referred to with regard to Section 28.2.12.10 of the Code, and that is oftentimes not an easy task, in that part of this issue may be what constitutes abandoned, what constitutes derelict, and that would be a factor in how you would apply that code section as well, and I think as well as the city's, I'm supposing, the ordinance that they would enforce. She does point out that the city has worked with us over the years and has had funding in the past to help facilitate removal of vessels where no owner was known or where the owner had no funds to remove the vessel, but there's currently no funds available for that type of work at this point, and so we're going to be faced with dealing with that issue, and that, you know, vessels of this nature maybe can't be towed away. They're just in such a state that they have to be dismantled at the site, and those just aren't easy and simple practices that you can accomplish immediately. So that's the perspective that she had on this. It sounds like the city is diligently working to try and figure out a way to address this. They realize it's a collaborative effort between not only local government, state government, and potentially federal government to try to find a way to effectively deal with this. And to that end, she concluded by recommending that the city and VMRC continue to work cooperatively with the other agencies to ascertain the ownership and come up with an appropriate suggestion for moving forward. And that's basically where it stands between the city and us. And we had deferred to the city's, I guess, pursuing this initially. But now we know sort of where they stand and what their perspective is. And like I said, Ms. Hall did indicate that they will be meeting tomorrow with Mr. Mullane to go over some of these issues with him.
Tony, what do you think of the suggestion that we use 1203 to address this?
I mean, I'll ask Paul to respond as well after maybe I give you some perspective. But I think you were correct in your assessment in your initial response that when we deal with derelict and abandoned vessels, we've usually used Section 1210 of the code. We've not viewed those as unauthorized encroachments or trespass on state submerged lands because they involved a vessel, something that could generally move and go and come around, and it has that character of being a vessel. And so it did not seem appropriate or would have seemed appropriate to utilize that section of code to pursue this particular situation. I mean, if there is some further or future legal opinion that suggests that's different, then I think we could pursue that. But at this point, we had felt like 28.2.1210 provided the proper mechanism for attempting to deal with these vessels. And I don't know, Paul, if you have any other perspective.
Well, I mean, as the commission knows, and Tony in particular, we have a case before the Virginia Supreme Court right now, a VMRC versus Chincoteague Inn, which deals with commission's jurisdiction over vessels. In that case, a vessel was being used to expand the footprint of an upland structure, and even in that case, the courts are, the Supreme Court will ultimately answer the question, but it's unclear as to whether the commission has jurisdiction even over vessels that are basically attached to upland structures and built out to expand the structure itself. Here, we have something completely different. Here we have vessels maintaining their character as vessels, not excusing the condition they're in or what's going on, but the problem ultimately becomes whether they're trespassing or encroaching. And with respect to waterways, it goes back all the way to Roman law. There's a component that the waterways are used as highways. And where vessels are using those, it's an authorized use of the bottom land as opposed to an unauthorized use. And where you have an authorized use, it's not an encroachment. It's not a trespass. Now, I will grant that in this situation, you probably have some vessels that have crossed that line, but I cannot say as a blanket statement that the commission, by operation of 1203, would have jurisdiction over those vessels. Additionally, as a practical matter, using 28.2-1203 as the vehicle to force removal would probably give rise to more litigation, more protracted litigation for each individual vessel, whereas if we went under 1210, we could resolve it more expeditiously, and that's the course as counsel of the commission that I would recommend it take for those reasons.
I think with that advice, I would here today direct Sergeant Coppersight to not only assist the Norfolk in their efforts, but the city of Norfolk in their efforts, but pursue as diligently as he possibly can addressing this problem under 1210. I think I have the authority to do that as commissioner. I don't think we need approval of that from the full commission, and so that is so ordered. Sergeant Coppersight, do you want to add anything to the discussion at this point? Or? All right. I think that's the best we can do for you today, Mr. Lang. I'll give you a couple minutes to respond. We've got a long agenda, so I don't want to belabor the issue too much, but if you want to, if you need a couple of minutes to respond, what's been done here, we'll be glad to hear you.
Thank you.
We're very interested in an expeditious resolution also. The information that was requested from us when we met this summer was provided by letters dated September 4 and September 5. And as best we can tell, there's been no action taken over the last 3 months. We understand that you've received an email that came in at 6 p.m. last night that suggests that perhaps there could be a renewed emphasis on this. And I'm sure that you, Commissioner Travelstad, directing your staff to be energized on this. We're looking forward to getting some of those vessels out of this waterway just as soon as we possibly can. We'll be following it very closely.
All right. Thank you. We'll stay in touch. Appreciate you spending the day with us. We're going to move on, folks, to the next agenda item. Are there any other public comments on other issues? Seeing none, we're going to move on.
If you don't mind, my cousin would like to give you an article that was published by CNN Money about the Moraine.
We'll be glad to take that.
Okay, so you would know that it doesn't have to be the city or the federal government or the state government that takes the action. He apparently has a business that's producing $2 million in revenue according to his own account in March of 2012, and I think he would have the funds to do it.
Okay.
You just want to hand it to me, I'll hand them out. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gomez.